Did any of you see on a news report, maybe a week or two ago, where a woman was at a zoo and she climbed over the barrier and was trying to take a selfie picture with some kind of a panther behind her, but there was still a fence between her and the panther, but the panther reached through that fence and got a hold of her arm and so forth. And did any of you see that on the news? Now, I would like to think that I have more sense than to climb over the barrier that's there in dealing with a wild animal like that. Can you imagine being thrown into a den of hungry lions? I saw some of the damage that one panther did with a person that wasn't even fully in the enclosure. Tonight, we find Daniel being cruelly treated. And we saw in Daniel chapter 6, and you may start to turn there, Daniel chapter 6. We are familiar with this well-known story, but I trust that we are being challenged with perhaps some new thoughts concerning this passage. And the conspiracy that was first brought against Daniel by his enemies, we studied that. And then we looked last week at Daniel's consecration, even in the midst of the decree that had been written and proclaimed. His consecration to God was greater than the king's decree. And when we come to verse 15 now, we are going to see, even though the king desired to somehow try to not follow through on the law that had been signed, he could not get out of it. And we see him having a sleepless night here, as we read in a few moments. We see the king having a sleepless night. Why do you think he had a sleepless night? Someone, and it's all right, I know this is not Sunday school class, this is evening service. We usually don't do a lot of discussing back and forth on an evening service, but why do you think perhaps the king had a sleepless night? Yes, Erdos? Guilt, maybe. Why was Daniel there? Because the king had been tricked when he could have, if he was wiser, caused things to happen that would never put Daniel in this situation. Yes? Yeah. He probably wasn't very happy about having them do this to him. And do you think he cared for Daniel? Certainly. So there's a whole lot of reasons why he's not sleeping. Guilt, concern, and he makes some statements here that are the kind of statements that an unsaved person might make with a little bit of doubt. You know? And he makes some statements here, and then he's still doubtful about them, so he's got to think all night about whether God's really going to do what he said God could do. So let's start at verse 15, and here we see the cruelty that's being followed through with. Daniel is going to have to forfeit his life. And Daniel 6, verse 15. We start with, "Then these men assembled unto the king and said unto the king, Know, O king, that the law of the Medes and Persians is that no decree nor statute which the king establisheth may be changed." So they're reminding the king of the law. They're putting the pressure on. They don't want the king to look for a way out. They don't want the king to be able to in any way deliver Daniel from this sentence. And so they are reminding him about the law, and they are now putting the pressure on for the king to execute Daniel. It says in that verse, these men, what men? Well, probably the men who were involved in the original plot and the original plan, and those who tricked the king into signing the original decree in the first place. These men, these wicked government men, these wicked men who conspired and crafted this decree against Daniel, these high government officials who were trying to get rid of Daniel, probably because of his godly practices and his example of godliness before them. Again, it is not unusual for high government officials in every age to use their position and pervert their power and use that power instead of for the good of the nation, but to get their own way. And this is just another example of this here. Then we see the moment of the pressure. These men were the men of the pressure. There was a moment of the pressure. What's the moment? Then. They didn't waste any time. Everything here, notice verse 11 says, then. Verse 12, then. Verse 13, then. Verse 14, then. Verse 15, then. Every one of these verses just follows along in rapid succession. They did not want to waste any time. They had been working for months this whole plan. They had been spying on Daniel. They wanted this to be carried out immediately. The king had already worked all day trying to figure out a way to deliver Daniel. Now the men are working overtime to make sure that things are taken care of rapidly. And now, also the manner of their pressure. We already looked at this. This is the third time in the chapter that we have the word assembled together already. They assembled. These men assembled. And we suggested last week that this word assembled is not a word that talks about this assembling in an orderly fashion. This word describes a disorderly conduct going on. We might call it a riot. We might call it a mob scene. And so they were really putting the pressure on, and they didn't care what they had to do. They were going to see Daniel dead. I don't know if, and my mind and my imagination starts running away from me here. I don't know if they were chanting, lion's den, lion's den, lion's den. I don't know if that's what they were chanting. I don't know if they had a sign that they were holding up saying, feed the lions, feed the lions. You know, I'm letting my mind go away a little bit here, but they were a riotous group. They were a disorderly group that were calling for this. And then they were reminding him of the mandate that already was there. The mandate, the law that the Medes and Persians, once a law was signed, it could not be changed. And they insisted that this law be enforced. And of course, they were especially trying to use that law for their own wicked purposes. And in those days, who was the king revered to be? Another god. And so they were trying to butter him up a little bit by reminding him that he was a god, and gods don't do what? Change their mind when something's taking place. So we see all of this pressure that's being applied to carry out this cruel sentence. And then when we come to verse 16, we see the performing of the sentence. Then, notice the then again. Then the king commanded, and they brought Daniel and cast him into the den of lions. I can again just see the look on the enemy's faces of Daniel as they think, what? We have won. Daniel was just cast into the, that was their whole goal. And they see now that being carried out. So the king commanded it. The king did not wish to do it, but the king knew that he had to do it, and he commanded them to carry out the sentence. And then he commands, and it says, they brought Daniel. Again, I can almost sense that the they is a large group of people. If you were normally, under what circumstances would you be acting if you were taking a criminal to his sentence? There would be an armed guard with him. He probably would be bound and taken. I don't know for sure what kind of binding they had, but Daniel was not resisting. Daniel was not trying to get away. But there were probably a number of soldiers who had the responsibility of escorting someone who is sentenced to death to their death. But I also think that they included some of the guys who were involved in having him arrested in the first place. They brought Daniel and cast him into the den of lions. And those who had accused, those who were part of the soldier escort, Daniel was being treated like a criminal, and Daniel had done nothing against the law except pray to his God. And at the last minute, I think we can see again some of the soft-heartedness of this king. His tenderness is being seen here a little bit. Now the king spake and said unto Daniel, thy God whom thou servest continually, he will deliver thee. What a testimony Daniel had before that king. Now, whether the king really believed that or not, he at least used those words to comfort Daniel. Yes, he's a cruel king, but he has a tender heart. And most of the kings at that time who were ruling in the world were never known for their tenderness. But here we see a little bit of tenderness coming to the surface. And we see not only his tenderness, we see his testimony. He knew about Daniel's devotion. He knew about Daniel's serving God. He knew that Daniel was faithful. Daniel was not a secret disciple. Daniel let everyone know that he was a faithful servant of God who served and kept his commitments to his God. And then we have a very simple statement: cast him into the den of lions. It's almost kind of matter of fact, like, cast him into the den of lions. Just a few words to describe a very cruel and unjust sentence. Albert Barnes, in his commentary on this passage, said this: discoveries among the ruins of Babylon have shown that the mode of punishment by throwing offenders against the laws to lions, it was actually practiced there, and the discoveries may be classed among the numerous instances in which modern investigations have tended to confirm the statements in the Bible. In other words, he's saying that they have found archaeological evidence that this indeed was a practice carried out by the Babylonians and by the Persians. The horrible results of casting a person into a den of lions. We're going to see a description of that a little later, not in relationship to Daniel, but in relationship to his enemies. We will see how terrible this was. And we will see how the tables were turned. Then we see in verse 17 the closing of the den. And a stone was brought and laid upon the mouth of the den, and the king sealed it with his own signet and with a signet of his lords. There was a double sealing of this, so that no one would dare, number one, break the king's seal, but also just to be sure that the king didn't break his own seal. All the lords put their seals on there as well. And so they have put this stone and a seal. And again, Barnes says, probably by means of clay or wax, in such a way that it could not be removed by anyone without breaking it, and consequently without the perpetration of a crime of the highest kind, and no greater offense could be committed against his authority than to break his seal, and there were no greater security than the stone would not be removed. Both the signet and the lords affixed their seal on the stone. Double sealing. So we have this sentencing that was cruel, and it was carried out. Now we see the sorrowing. Notice verse 18. Then the king went to his palace and passed the night fasting. I'm sure that we all realize that most of the time, the evening meal was a late meal in these kingdoms. I know all of us who are health conscious, we don't like to eat late at night. But in those practices, they would normally have their feast late in the evening. And rather than feasting, what is the king doing? Fasting. And he went to his palace and passed the night fasting. And what else did he not have? Any food, but he didn't have any music. Neither were instruments of music brought to him. And not only was there no food and no music, but there was also no sleep. His sleep went from him. And so, again, if you like alliteration, and who doesn't? No supper, no symphonies, and no sleep. And then, verse 19. Then the king arose very early in the morning and went in haste unto the den of lions. And when he came to the den, he cried with a, what kind of voice? Lamentable voice unto Daniel. I think he's been sorrowing all night, probably upset with himself for ever allowing this, feeling guilty, sorry that there was no way for him to change the law and rescue Daniel. And now he comes with a lamentable voice. And the king spake and said to Daniel, O Daniel, servant of the living God, is thy God whom thou servest continually able to deliver thee from the lions? He rose up early. He was already awake. He rose up early. He still had the pain of his guilt and the pain of thinking he had been responsible for killing an innocent man. He ran to the den. He went in haste unto the den of lions. And then he speaks in a lamentable voice, crying out. Notice in his own words, what does he call Daniel's God? The living God. The king is starting to get the message, isn't he? We serve all kinds of dead gods, the king would say, but Daniel serves the living God. And I believe he intended to mean several things about this living God. The God who possessed life, the God who provides life, and the God who preserves life. He's the living God. Idols did not possess life. Idols could not provide life, and idols could not preserve or protect life. A number of years ago, we had a philosophy rampant in our country where people were saying this: God is dead. And I remember seeing in a Christian magazine a very wonderful little cartoon. A man had put the sign beside the road and pounded it in, and it said, God is dead. Then you see in the second frame of this cartoon a vine starting to grow up around the base of the sign. In the third picture, you see the vine growing up more. In the last picture, you see the sign has been covered completely by this vine except for the words, God is. You know what the king was admitting here? Daniel serves a God who's not dead. He serves a living God. And then he not only talks about the faithfulness of God, but he also talks about Daniel. And he says, Daniel, you are the servant of the living God, whom thou servest continually. And then he has this concern. What's his concern? Is that God, thy living God, whom thou servest continually, is he able to deliver thee from the lions? And we're going to see the answer next week. The rest of the story. And we know that he what? Gets delivered. But don't read it. You've got to wait till next week. The carrying out of the cruel sentence and the concern and sorrow in regard to the cruel sentence. But we're going to see next week the delivering from the cruel sentence that takes place. Isn't it wonderful what Daniel originally says? Can you imagine? And again, my mind just, he's standing there, leaning over the open pit. The stone has been moved. He's calling out. And Daniel answers him. You talk about a dramatic moment. And the question that the king asked was immediately answered. Yes, my God is able to deliver me. And we all need to rest in that same truth tonight. our God is able to deliver us. How many of you know the little chorus? He's able, he's able, I know he's able. My Lord is able to carry me through. Anybody know that? Well, let's try it. Even if you don't know it, you can listen to the rest of us.